Thanks for tuning in for the Book Club at 91.7 here on WVXU and WMUB. I'm Mark Purcell. On the phone with me is author Jeff Wilser. His book is called The Good News About What's Bad For You, The Bad News About What's Good For You. It's all about some of what we accept as conventional wisdom that really might surprise you. Jeff Wilser, welcome to the Book Club at 91.7.
Great to be here. Thanks, Mark.
I will ask where you started this. Did you start with the good news about what's bad for you, or did you give the bad news about what's good for you a run for its money first? Where was the spark here, Jeff?
Of both. I think, like a lot of us, I found myself very confused seeing health news, because it seems like every week a study seems to contradict itself, right? So 1 week, soy is good. Next week, soy is bad. Next week, hey, fish is good for you because it has fatty acids that are good. Next week, fish is bad because it has dangerous levels of mercury. And so I'm like, which is it? So the book is meant to kind of explore the nuance in all of these studies and try to make sense out of this. And why does it seem that health news is so kind of ping-pongs back and forth, good, bad? So that was kind of the spirit in which I started.
You teach us in the book, both in the good news side and the bad news side, that you can't always believe the headlines. That if the headlines aren't going to be bland, they will find a way to try to attract your eye and make you read them. And so a lot of times they're, shall we say, exaggerated.
Yeah, and again, I get it. You know, I'm in media myself. I totally understand if you're an editor, a headline saying "new study: bacon might cause cancer," that's a lot more likely to get clicks than a headline "study suggests odds of cancer from bacon increased by maybe 0.1%. But in the case of last month or a month or two ago, when there was that study about bacon and stomach cancer, when you look deeper in the fine print of the article, it really only amounted to about less than a 1 percentage point difference. So it's, you know, often the news that seems so dire, oh no, you can't eat this because it's so bad. When you dig a little deeper, it's not as bad as we think. And then vice versa, something like, you know, we all want kind of we all want to think there's this great food out there like kale, and it's so good. It has all these magical properties. It's going to, you know, boost the odds of X, Y, and Z. Well, I mean, again, kale is not going to kill you. There's nothing really bad about kale, but it might not have these magical properties we hope it does.
You talk also and explain early in the book about absolute risk versus relative risk, and that plays a role in a lot of this information too. And you know, in this information saturated age, you do have to drill a little bit deeper and consider the many perspectives and not take that headline to heart.
Exactly, that's really well said. In the book, I talk about, let's go back to the example of bacon. You might hear that a study shows that some food, like bacon, might increase your risk of some kind of disease. In this case, it was stomach cancer, by 18%. Now you hear that and you say, geez, 18%, that actually sounds really high. And 18% is a large percentage. But that's the relative risk, right? So to see what any kind of food or activity or drink, to see what that really means to concrete terms to you and me, you have to look at what's the absolute risk in the first place before you have this food or drink or anything else, and then how much of the relative risk increased by. So in the case of bacon and stomach cancer, if someone, and these are kind of just, I'm using simple numbers here, that, you know, we can certainly geek out and get more accurate, but ballpark, the absolute risk in the first place, if none of us ever touch bacon, is 5% of having this kind of stomach cancer. Now, if we have bacon, that study suggests that risk will go up by 18%. It doesn't mean 5 goes to 18. That means 5%, not to, you know, nerd out in math here, but 5% times 1.18, right? The 5% goes up by 15%, the 5% goes to 6%. So the big scary headline, which was bacon causes cancer, when you drill deeper and look at the absolute risk versus relative risk, you see the absolute risk only goes from 5% to 6%. And so it's really misleading. And the book goes through a lot of examples like that, so showing how what seems at first blush like something might be very, you know, black and white, good or bad, when you drill deeper, is less of a slam dunk than we would think.
Jeff Wilser, he's the author of The Good News About What's Bad For You, The Bad News About What's Good For You, available where books are sold. Details at our website, wvxu.org. And we'll start on the good news side, because, of course, everyone wants to hear that their favorite advice is actually good for them. And we'll begin with what I have in my hand right here, a cup of coffee. And coffee can, you know, be knocked sometimes, but actually it can be quite good for you.
Absolutely. I mean, if you ask me, there are very few things I would give up on, give up more or less in life than coffee. Coffee is one of my, you know, few true joys in the world. I can't imagine life without it. And I think millions of Americans feel that way. And what's funny is that we almost feel guilty about this. We feel like, I know it's bad for me, but I need it. Or I know that I should cut back, but I need it. The irony is, almost every study, and there are way too many to kind of go into, but gobs and gobs of research suggest that, well, coffee bestows many benefits to us. There have been studies suggesting its improvement of short-term memory, of long-term memory, of curbing various diseases, of making it more likely to stay awake during meetings at work. So, like, the when we feel this benefit of caffeine and we think it's just us. No, there's plenty of medical research suggesting, yeah, it's overall good for health, and there it's linked to longer lifespans too. There was a fear a while ago that a coffee could have negative risks for our hearts and the health of our heart. That has since been generally debunked by most studies. So I think people should just drink their coffee with pride and enjoyment and not feel bad about it.
Well, you go through in the book and show how some of our favorite vices, you know, video games, web surfing, and all have merit in our lives, and you know, that they can be beneficial. But out of all the vices in the Good News About What's Bad For You half of the book, what is it that people are most interested or delighted to learn that there is good news about their bad habit?
I think one thing that really struck me in my research was that about and alcohol, and we've all kind of heard that old wives' tale of, oh, you know, red wine is good for your heart. And we've all heard that, and many of us have kind of said that jokingly. I didn't really think it was true before doing research. It sounded just too good to be true. What I was surprised to learn is that's kind of half right. That's half true. It is true red wine is good for your heart, and plenty of studies have backed that up. But the irony is, it's not really because of the red grapes. It's the main ingredient of red wine that makes it healthy is alcohol. And alcohol, period, in moderation, mind you, of course in moderation. But regardless of whether it's red wine or white wine or beer or whiskey or tequila or vodka, to the extent that there is a health benefit there, and in moderation, many, many studies and many doctors I've spoken to all confirm this, say that it doesn't really matter what the alcohol is. So if you're someone who enjoys sipping whiskey, again, in moderation, but you feel like that's a vice, and someone who's drinking red wine is being quote-unquote heart healthy, the whiskey sipper should take comfort, and actually, you're being just as healthy as your smug wine drinking friends. It's all beneficial in moderation.
And Jeff, you not only talk the talk, but you walk the walk, because towards the end of The Good News About What's Bad For You, you decided to practice and look into junk food, and you spent a month eating only junk food, drinking only black coffee, protein shakes, and whiskey. Whose bright idea was this, Jeff?
Yeah, this is a diet that no doctor would ever recommend, and I don't recommend. I am not suggesting your listeners pick up Twinkies and start replacing their broccoli with, you know, donuts. That's not something I'm recommending. That said, something very interesting happened here. So as you said, for 1 month, there were four food groups: junk food, protein shakes, black coffee, and whiskey. And in that month, I actually lost 11 pounds. The trick is I kept portion control, strict, really anal retentive portion control. Like, Mark, when I ate Cheez-Its, I would have one serving, which is 27 Cheez-Its, and I counted out each Cheez-It. And I kept track of every calorie in a little phone app, and I put myself on a calorie budget. And I think the takeaway here is not that Cheez-Its are good for you. Like, they're pretty, you know, they're probably pretty bad in large quantities. Mm-hmm. But we get so obsessed with the minutiae of health of, oh, what's my macronutrient profile look like? How much carbs versus protein versus fat? Should I have GMO, non-GMO, paleo versus plants, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. And it's not, these questions are irrelevant. They are important. But the point is that moderation is such a powerful force. Moderation is so effective that you can lose weight even if your food choices aren't optimal, right? So if I can lose weight with crap, then imagine how powerful a force moderation is with actually good food. So that's the idea, that junk isn't really the enemy. The steak isn't the enemy. Bacon isn't really the enemy. All those things in moderation are probably okay. The enemy is excess. Mm-hmm. Excess is the enemy.
The good news about what's bad for you. The bad news about what's good for you. The book by Jeff Wilser. I'm speaking with Jeff on the phone from his home in New York today. And Jeff, I wanted to flip it over in just a couple of minutes that we have left, because we've been talking about the good news about what's bad for you. But now we go to the bad news about what's good for you. And I have to admit, this was more fun reading because I love your dedication to the health nuts. I'm sorry to the rest of us. You're welcome. And boy, you start out right away with kale.
Yeah. So, I mean, first off, can we just be honest about this? There's a National Kale Day, right? I get my little spidey sense tingles, and kind of my skepticism kind of rises whenever there's a holiday about a vegetable. I think, so as I say in the book, and as a nutritionist told me, and I should also tell you, by the way, and to your listeners, I am not a doctor, but I, or a health expert by trade. I interviewed a small army of health experts, nutritionists and doctors and neuroscientists, and kind of synthesized their thoughts on this. And as one nutritionist and health expert told me, look, kale, it's not bad for, there's some concern that, oh, too much of it is bad for your thyroid. And maybe it's true in heaping doses. But the real thing is, yeah, it's like spinach. It's a food darling of the moment, but it's a leafy green. It's not going to somehow cure all of your ailments. And I think that we, you know, you joke that you enjoy the bad news part. I think the reason why is that the bad news is actually kind of good news, because if it's true, we don't have to be so fastidious about organic, non-organic, and GMO, non-GMO. That means we might be able to be healthy by relaxing a bit. And I think that's kind of good news.
Well, I noticed that fruit falls under the, you know, having some bad news about what's good for you and something you don't consider. And you also go fruit juice up against a soda and show that the downside of fruit is it's very tasty, has, you know, a lot of fiber in it, but also is filled with sugar.
Totally. Just like something like quote unquote vitamin water that's stuffed with calories and sugar. We label something like Coke or soda as evil because it has all the sugar, but oftentimes apple juice will have just as much sugar and calories. And there's actually a study in the UK that tried to really kind of tease out this issue, and they found that apple juice in some ways is more sinister than soft drinks, because when people drink fruit juices, they think, oh, it's healthy, therefore they might drink it more in higher quantity. And they know that something like Coke is not healthy, right? So there's almost, I call them almost like sneaky Trojan horses, things like fruit juices, which seem, you know, the labels, they have smiling children like playing on playgrounds. That looks healthy, but really it's just as sugary as Coke.
Well, Jeff, there's too much to go in here, but I have to say it was very enlightening. Thank you for all the good news and the bad news, too.
My pleasure. Really enjoyed it. Thanks, Mark.
Jeff Wilser, his book is The Good News About What's Bad For You. And then you flip it over and read it the other way upside down, and it's The Bad News About What's Good For You. You can learn more about the book at our website, wvxu.org. This is the Book Club at 91.7.